You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Ray, filling in for Jim Gaudette. On January 15th, an underwater volcano in the island nation of Tonga erupted with the force of 100 Hiroshima bombs. The Hunga Tonga eruption killed three people, destroyed homes, and triggered tsunamis. Meanwhile, back here in Idaho, Boise State PhD geophysics student Zach Geskinen was studying very low-frequency sounds up at Banner Summit, that's not far from Stanley, and as part of his research, he buried special microphones in the snowpack to record the sounds of things like avalanches. And he managed to capture the sound that was made by the volcano way out in the Pacific Ocean when it blew up. So Zach joins us now, along with volcanologist Dr. Jeffrey Johnson with Boise State's Infrasound Lab, and he also spends his time studying volcanoes. Thank you for joining us today, both of you. I'm glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having us, Samantha.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so I made it through all the big words. Zach, how did you find out you had recorded the Tonga volcano in Idaho?
I went up to Banner Summit and picked up the monitoring equipment and downloaded the data and brought it back. And Jeff, who works with volcanoes a lot more than I do, knew immediately that we were probably going to pick up something and suggested that I go through the data. And I sent it along to him and he took a look and saw some really cool signals from the volcano.
And Jeff, you knew right away this was the Tonga eruption.
Indeed, yeah. So there was a lot of chatter in our community of volcano acoustics people, and many of us had observed these sound waves propagating globally. So it was just a matter of looking at our own data to find the signals.
And you recorded the sound of the eruption not once, not twice, but three times. How did that happen? Explain the three times.
Yeah. So the explosion in the South Pacific was about 10,000 kilometers away from Idaho. And we recorded the sound waves traveling from the South Pacific to Idaho, and they arrived some 8 hours later. So traveling a little bit faster than a jetliner. And then, about 20 hours after that, we recorded sounds again. And these are sounds traveling the opposite way around the world. And then some 20 hours after that, we record circumnavigating sounds. So these sounds are so powerful that they're able to go around the Earth multiple times.
So it went all the way around the world and came back to basically Banner Summit. That's amazing.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, and it's important to note that these sounds are very low frequency. So no one in Idaho actually heard this eruption, but the sensors that Zach deployed were sensitive to these very low frequency sounds.
Okay, but with the magic of what you did to these sounds, speeding them up 10,000 times, we actually will hear those sounds. Right now I'm going to play them. So listen for, this is all three sounds together in one recording. Now, as you said, Jeff, that's not a sound you can hear with your human ear. And Zach, that had to be sped up 10,000 times so we could hear it, right?
That's correct. Yeah, so these are sounds that we can't hear. And these sounds in particular were cyclicking about 0.1 hertz. So they were going incredibly slowly, even for sounds that are slow already or slowly. Yeah, low frequency to begin with. These are especially low frequency waves.
And Jeff, you mentioned it took 8 hours to get here, but it took a while for these sounds to be recorded, something like 6 hours for the first one, I think.
Yeah, so that demonstration that you just played was 72 hours of time compressed into 28 seconds, and that's speeding up by a factor of 10,000. And what we see when we analyze this data in more detail is that first arrival that took 8 hours to show up in Idaho actually continued for some 6 hours. And so you can hear that with your ear. It's not an instantaneous sound. It's a few seconds long. It corresponds to 6 hours of bombardment. And that's because the eruption itself was not over in a flash. It lasted for some hours. And also because these sounds are propagating way up into the atmosphere, something like 120 kilometers above the ground, before they duct their way or refract their way back to Idaho. And so the signals get drawn out.
We're speaking with Zach Keskinen, who's a Boise State PhD. He's a geophysics expert now, and volcanologist Dr. Jeffrey Johnson. We're talking about the recording of the sound of the Tunga volcanic eruption that was made in Idaho up at Banner Summit with some of Zach's equipment. Jeff, when we talked before, you said this was a once-in-a-lifetime blast. And as the volcanologist, I'm going to ask, why is that?
Right. So our community was very excited. Of course, the devastation caused by this eruption was tragic. But from a scientific standpoint, it is a rare event. And so Krakatoa, which erupted in 1883, was the most recent analog to the Hunga Tonga eruption. And in 1883, there was a violent eruption that was caused by an underwater volcano interacting with seawater, and a giant explosion that ended up propagating sounds globally, much like what happened on January 15th. So it has been something like 139 years since we've had one of these cataclysmic eruptions that produces such a strong blast.
And that has something to do with magma?
Right. So we're going to get technical here and use the term phreatomagmatic eruption. And all that means is that there's magma from the volcano that interacts with seawater, which is plentiful if your volcano is right at the edge of sea level. And so all that seawater turns into steam, and it's a hugely violent type of eruption.
Wow, that's just amazing. So recording the sound of this underwater volcano in Idaho is really, really cool, especially for science geeks. But what's the practical application of studying things like low frequency sounds that are coming from volcanoes?
I would say most volcano scientists like to see their science used in application, and especially for hazard monitoring. So the Hunga Tonga eruption is a great example of how infrasound, located a long ways away from the eruption, can be used to tell us what happened at the site of the eruption. It was not easy to make direct observations of this eruption. Shortly after the onset, it became dark. Of course, there's a lot of ash and cloud in the area, so direct observations of this event are hard. So we use remote sensing types of observations, including these sound waves. And they can tell us a lot about how long the eruption lasted, how big it was, and you know, it's not the only technology that geophysicists use to understand volcanic eruptions, but it's one of the most important ones, this technology of infrasound. And I will add one other thing, is that this eruption was especially powerful. There was an article in the Washington Post that just released suggesting that the ash reached 36 miles above sea level, and that is a record.
Wow, that's amazing. Zach, you weren't out to study volcanoes with this. What exactly were you looking for when you buried some microphones in the snow up at Banner Summit?
Yeah, so in addition to volcanoes, I guess my interest is snow avalanches, which we have a lot of out here in Idaho, and especially near Banner Summit, which is near Highway 21, which a lot of people probably have seen shut down. So I was looking at how much these infrasound signals are muffled by the snowpack, just to get a sense of if we're using these to detect avalanches, which there's arrays in Little Cottonwood Canyon, Utah, there's arrays in Alaska that are used to detect snow avalanches. How much of that signal are we losing as that snowpack gets deeper, as we get ice layers and things like that? So that was the original goal.
Tell us more about the one in Utah, and this is for Jeff or for Zach. That's helping to detect avalanches that, like up on Highway 21, may fall onto a road and cause a problem.
Yeah, it's three arrays that a Boise State, a former Boise State PhD student actually runs out there for the DOT, and it's actively returning avalanche sightings along with locations and timing to the forecasters who work on that road. So giving them really valuable information about, we need to close this road. These are the times and places where we're having avalanches based on the storm that you're currently seeing. So a real-time system. I don't know if Jeff wants to add more to that.
Yes, so a former PhD geophysics student, Scott Havens, from Snowbound Solutions, has been maintaining infrasound monitoring in Utah to surveil this highway. And interestingly enough, perhaps less interesting for him than for me, those infrasound stations in Utah also recorded the Tonga eruption. It was a global phenomena. But the current installation in Utah is very application driven. So the snow avalanche forecasters are able to use infrasound, low frequency sound waves, to figure out when and where avalanches occur.
And Zach, is that what you're hoping to do in Idaho?
Ideally, what we're looking at right now is just the muffling effect of it to get a sense of, can we do this with really, really deep snowpacks and how does it impact it? But ideally, yeah, it'd be great to set up avalanche monitoring and use those with other remote sensing tools that we have out here to try and know when avalanches are occurring and help the forecasters in Idaho at the Sawtooth Center and for the DOT.
And I know anyone who's ever driven Idaho 21 or tried to when the road has been shut down would greatly appreciate that. So, Zach, what's next? Just you keep studying the sounds and then go from there.
Yeah, ideally what would be great to do is to study these sounds and start to learn more about what types of avalanches are causing different sounds. So there's loose avalanches, there's wet avalanches, and trying to learn more about how these different types of avalanches cause different infrasound signals is something that Jeff has been talking to me about that I think would be a great thing to look at in the future.
That is awesome. I did not know there were different kind of avalanches. So very cool. Well, we've been speaking with Boise State PhD geophysics student Zach Keskinen and volcanologist Dr. Jeffrey Johnson with Boise State's Infrasound Lab about recording the sound of the Tonga volcanic eruption here in Idaho. And I want to thank the both of you so much for being here and for explaining about the sound and about what you're doing up at Banner Summit.
Thank you for having us, Samantha.
Yeah, thank you for taking an interest in our science.
It's fascinating and, like you said, could be helping people in the future. So thanks again. And up next, we're going to learn more about the geese that have taken over the parks and the lawns all over the city of Boise. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat, and you're listening to Idaho Matters.